we have now had all three levels of our federal courts weigh in on this issue.
Marriage for same-sex couples is reaffirmed in Alaska. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, October 17th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, a land dispute over ANWR.
So it's the state's contention that those lands that we're now requesting were never withdrawn as part of the original Arctic Wildlife Refuge.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by BP Alaska. As part of their commitment to Alaska, BP and their employees are investing in over 400 education and service organizations in communities across the state. More at alaska.bp.com. The Medallion Foundation and Federal Aviation Administration set standards for the operation of aircraft and airports. More information at faa.gov/go/flyalaska. This message is sponsored by the Medallion Foundation.
Same-sex marriages are legal again in Alaska. The U.S. Supreme Court denied the state a stay, which would have stopped the issuance of marriage licenses to same-sex couples until the Ninth Circuit Court heard the state's appeal early next year. Despite the ruling, the governor's office issued a statement saying they will continue with the appeals process because Governor Sean Parnell has sworn to uphold the state's constitution. In 1998, voters approved a constitutional amendment in Alaska to define marriage as between one man and one woman. Joshua Decker is the executive director of the Alaska's ACLU. He says the governor's continued appeal is a waste of taxpayer money.
Governor Parnell took an oath to support the Alaska Constitution, but he also took an oath to support the United States Constitution. And we have now had all three levels of our federal courts weigh in on this issue.
The week has been a legal ping-pong match. The Alaska District Court overturned the state's same-sex marriage ban on Sunday. Couples began applying for licenses on Monday, and three couples were allowed to wed immediately. As others sat out the mandatory 3-day waiting period, the state was granted a temporary stay by the Ninth Circuit Court on Wednesday in order to give the Supreme Court a chance to make a decision. That stay was lifted this morning at 11 a.m. when the Supreme Court denied the request. Same-sex couples can receive marriage licenses when state courts and offices reopen on Monday. Today is a state holiday. The Ninth Circuit will hear the state's appeal early next year. The state must file their brief by late January 2015. Arizona's same-sex marriage ban was also overturned today. That state is also in the Ninth Circuit. The state's attorney general will not appeal that decision. The state of Alaska has launched the opening salvo in a border dispute with the federal government over the western edge of the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. At stake is a 20,000-acre wedge of land that the federal government counts as part of ANWR. But in a letter to the BLM today, the state asserts the government has mapped ANWR incorrectly. The state says the wedge of land between the Canning and Staines River is actually outside the refuge, according to a 1960 legal description of the refuge border. Marty Parsons, an official at the Alaska Division of Mining, Land and Water, says the state is laying claim to the land pursuant to the Statehood Act and ANILCA.
So it's the state's contention that those lands that we're now requesting were never withdrawn as part of the original Arctic Wildlife Refuge. And so, since they're not withdrawn, they're available to be conveyed to the state to complete its land entitlement.
The area is a few miles from the Point Thompson Field and may have development potential. The Parnell administration began reviewing the refuge border in 2011 after it received bids for oil and gas tracts on lands nearby. BLM spokeswoman Maureen Clark says the Bureau has received the state's letter and is checking to see if the matter was previously litigated. An earlier dispute over the coastal boundary of the refuge went to the U.S. Supreme Court and took nearly 20 years to resolve. A legal settlement between an environmental organization and the federal government requires review of plans for dealing with new sources of fine particulate pollution in Los Angeles, California, and Fairbanks, Alaska. Jonathan Evans with the Center for Biological Diversity says the agreement reached with the Environmental Protection Agency requires specific responses.
sure that new sources of pollution are meeting the best available control technology, the best on the market, making sure that there are offsets when the best available technology isn't enough, and making sure that the public is fully involved in the process for new sources that will end up polluting their communities.
The settlement requires the EPA to review the plan for addressing new sources of PM2.5 in Fairbanks by December 31st. Evans says the court-approved agreement stems from a suit filed by the Center for Biological Diversity to make sure that the Clean Air Act is being implemented, especially in areas like Fairbanks and LA, where pollution is an issue. The state of Alaska published its new source regulations this week. A container ship on its way from Washington to Russia lost power overnight and is drifting Friday off the north coast of British Columbia. The Canadian Forces Joint Rescue Coordination Center in Victoria says the Simshear is about 10 miles off Haida Gwaii. Acting Sub-Lieutenant Ron McDougall says there are concerns the vessel could run aground in heavy winds. The Canadian and U.S. Coast Guards are responding. The ship carries 440 tons of bunker oil and 55 tons of diesel. McDougall says there are 11 people on board. A helicopter was dispatched to remove the captain, who is injured. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Les Miserables opens an anchorage with local help.
We don't have $10 million to spend on a production. We have far less, so it really makes you be more creative on what you're going to do.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Ready to quit smoking, using e-cigarettes or other tobacco? Alaska's Tobacco Quitline can help with free, confidential coaching and support services through the telephone and online, and now introducing Text to Quit. Text to Quit helps you use medications correctly, manage urges, and prevent relapse, all from your mobile phone. Call 1-800-QUIT-NOW or visit alaskaquitline.com for more information. This message is sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Prevention and Control Program.
Les Miserables opens in Anchorage tonight. The Broadway musical has been produced around the world since 1985, but this production has some local twists. KSKA's Ann Hillman has more.
Andy Ferreira guides the cast through one of their last rehearsals before opening night. The 23 players have been working on the two-hour-long show for only about 2 weeks. The main cast and crew are from LA, but once they hit town, they were joined by four local girls. They'll take turns playing Little Cosette and Little Eponine.
Would you all agree it's pretty fun?
Yeah.
11-year-old Parker Kinley says she loves the once-in-a-lifetime experience and has learned from the professional cast.
I've learned that to trust all of your teammates because they're going to help you through this, and even if you mess up, they'll guide you through it, and yeah, it's just awesome.
And the wigs have shown her other things.
It's so fun to see yourself as a blonde.
But 10-year-old Megan Nelson says the acting is a challenge.
It's hard because I like to smile a lot and trying not to smile and to act sad because her mother couldn't afford to keep her, and so she had to drop her off with people who were actually mean to her. And so you have to be sad.
Let's face it, Les Mis isn't exactly a happy play.
Here we go. Who dies first? Okay. Stand up. Raise your hand. Chad, this is the first one that dies.
That's Ferrara again. He's blocking the scene at the barricade where, spoiler alert, most of the cast dies. They drape their bodies over a rotating set that looks like stacked rubble, broken chairs, wooden boxes. Ferrara says the set is smaller and less complicated than one might see on Broadway because this is a regional production.
We don't have $10 million to spend on a production. We have far less, so it really makes you be more creative on what you're going to do.
He says they do things like use candles and fog to create different scenes instead of relying on a massive turntable. Ferrara says, unlike other regional productions, the Anchorage Concert Association has been involved with this show for more than 2 years. They helped find the set and audition cast members. Even the local crew has more of a say than they would for other productions.
And here, they're involved. It's like, well, why don't we change over here, and why don't we do this? Every element, from the lights to the costumes to the sound department, is involved in some way putting on the project, instead of just being told what to do.
Ferrara says that's why they got to choose four girls instead of just one to sing Little Cosette's iconic song.
Crying at all is not allowed, not in my castle on a cloud.
Les Miserables is playing at the Performing Arts Center through October 26th. In Anchorage, I'm Ann Hillman.
Saturday is the anniversary of the purchase of Alaska, and in Sitka, the site of the historic sale, locals make it known from the moment visitors step off the plane. This usually goes over well, but sometimes creates confusion. KCAW's Emily Kwong has more.
Sitka's military past brushed elbows with present-day security last Friday. At 11 a.m., a TSA official called the police to report there was a man with a gun at the airport. But it wasn't just any type of gun.
A replica Civil War era pistol in a closed leather holster.
It turns out the owner, who wishes to remain anonymous, is part of a group of greeters for Alaska Day.
Hello.
You made it off the plane.
Program of events for Alaska Day.
Stationed at the arrivals gate, the group greets visitors coming off the morning and evening flights into Sitka.
Alaska Day. Tonight's a magic show, Centennial Hall.
All are dressed in 1867-era clothing. Betty Conklin organizes the group. She confirmed that on the first day of greeting, one gentleman wore a replica of a Civil War officer's uniform.
If they wore spacesuits in 1867, we'd be there in spacesuits. You know, I mean, if you're going to be period accurate, be period accurate. And that's what the gentleman was attempting to do.
Complete with wool trousers, white kid gloves, and that replica pistol. This alarmed a passenger who tipped off TSA, who called the police. By the time the officer arrived, the greeters were gone. Conklin said the costumed officer was ultimately told to remove the pistol. She wished the situation had been dealt with more directly.
In Alaska, we would have expected somebody to come up and say, "Hey, this bothers me," or, "Hey, we got a complaint," or, "Put something in the car." But that did not occur. We were treated like big city. It went through the commands before we were even notified of it happening.
Happy Alaska Day!
Though the identity of the passenger is unknown, Rebecca Britton remembers being on that very same flight Friday morning.
I was the first one off the plane, so when I got off, I saw everybody in their reenactment costumes, and I was just flabbergasted.
Britton said she didn't notice a gun amid all the bonnets and the hoop skirts. She came in from out of town to be a part of the celebrations in Sitka.
I think it's important to everybody, and they really give it their all to keep it going.
Conklin, who is a jail officer at the Sitka Police Department, was sympathetic to passengers afraid of guns in the airport, replica or otherwise. But she defended the history of the state and implored future visitors to respect it too.
65 years is a long time to be doing a celebration. So it must mean something to Alaskans to have an Alaska Day. So let's make it a good one.
And a loud one when military reenactors get to actually fire those guns, touching off black powder during Sitka's Alaska Day parade on Saturday. In Sitka, I'm Emily Kwong.
If you are a student, faculty, or staff member of the University of Alaska, you may receive a survey in your email this month asking questions about sexual assault on campus. The survey follows campus visits by federal investigators looking into how the college handles sexual assault complaints and violations. KTOO's Lisa Fu has more.
This is the first time the University of Alaska is conducting a campus climate survey. Michael O'Brien is a university attorney.
We want to have an understanding and ground truth how people feel sexual assault is being dealt with on our campuses. And it's a way to determine if there are areas of concern that we're unaware of.
This is also the first year the White House has recommended that schools around the country conduct campus climate surveys. The university's statewide institutional research and budget department is conducting the survey with help from the University of Alaska Anchorage's Justice Center. The roughly 50 multiple-choice questions are modeled after sample ones provided by the federal government. O'Brien warns the language of the survey is explicit.
Because we don't all share the same definitions of sexual assault, it has to go through a lot of explaining. Like, you wouldn't want someone to say, well, you know, no, I've never been sexually assaulted. I mean, every once in a while, I'll drink too much and my boyfriend will have sex with me when I'm passed out, but I've never been sexually assaulted. That is also sexual assault.
Students, faculty, and staff at University of Alaska have already been notified of the survey. O'Brien says around 18,000 will be randomly selected to participate, and all of them will get resources for counseling and reporting sexual assault.
We anticipate that when people are confronted with this sort of information, it often triggers a response. That's not the goal of it. We're not trying to trigger responses or draw out victims, but we realize that that could happen.
The survey is confidential and voluntary. O'Brien says results are anticipated before the end of the year. He doesn't know if they'll be made public. Lori Klein is the Student Conduct Administrator at the University of Alaska Southeast. She says the university is also looking at how to reach and engage students who aren't on a campus.
A big portion of our population are distance students, and they don't necessarily have a campus climate to speak to, but they could be anywhere, and they could be accessing buildings across our state that are in partnership with the university to provide students with space to access our classes. We care about those climates.
As part of an ongoing examination, federal investigators visited four campuses of the University of Alaska last week, hoping to hear from students. At the UAS Juneau campus, only two attended the women's focus group, but an investigator says other campus sessions drew up to 25 students. O'Brien says the federal investigation continues and won't likely be resolved for another several months. After that, he says the university can expect years of monitoring. In Juneau, I'm Lisa Fu.
State Senator Liesl McGuire says the legislature will hold hearings into the troubled Alaska National Guard, but she's getting pushback from the Senate president. McGuire also will call for a special investigator into allegations of sexual assault and other misconduct within the Guard. However, Senate President Charlie Huggins says he doesn't know if the legislature will do anything but muddy the water. After allegations of sexual assault within the agency, a federal report released September 4th found evidence of fraud and ethical misconduct. Critics said Governor Sean Parnell, who is seeking re-election next month, didn't act quickly enough. Huggins says it doesn't make sense to hold hearings with the election next month, but he's not convinced hearings are the best approach either.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by First National Bank Alaska, helping Alaska's business dreams grow for more than 90 years. Learn more at fnbalaska.com. Equal housing lender, member FDIC. Northern Air Cargo, providing year-round transportation of all types of freight, from vehicles and oversized equipment to small packages for corporations or small business. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956. And by Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, Alaska's pipeline to the future, delivering oil today, sustaining operations for tomorrow.
Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugiak,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Alaknarechamute.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Ann Hillman. This week on AK, looking inside. On AK, we often travel to wild and strange places and meet the people who live there. Today's journey is no different, except the place is inside each of us. Earlier this year, Sitka had a tarot card reader in residence. The tarot, it turns out, is mystical, but not magic. Like professional therapy, it's really about looking into a mirror, as tarot skeptic Robert Woolsey discovers.
My first problem with having a tarot reading is telling you about it. The tarot is incredibly personal.
Everything you've said is kind of uncanny. I don't think I can use this in a news story.
I assumed that a tarot reading would involve a certain amount of mumbo-jumbo, you will meet a tall, dark stranger kind of stuff. Richard Alfrichtig, who's doing my reading, says people often have that misconception and sometimes are a little disappointed at first to learn that a tall, dark stranger is not in the cards. It's something else entirely.
I think that
or the world that we live in, is in need of healing and transformation. And the tarot is a very positive, very approachable tool to move people into a conscious space where they're thinking in that way.
Al Frichtig is from Brooklyn. He's been studying the tarot for about 3 years. He was in Sitka for a residency in music and poetry and offered tarot readings on the side for fun. It really caught on. Over the course of the summer in Sitka, he did readings for around 70 people in this downtown coffee shop. A skilled reader sizes up his client and lays out some compelling options. I'm a single parent with college-age children. Al Frichtig doesn't know this. All he sees is a guy with a microphone and turns over three cards. The High Priestess, the Hermit, and the Emperor.
Very interesting spread that you have going on here. I would say that right now what I'm seeing in your life is there's this phase or this space that you're in where you're trying to sort of let yourself follow the light of your wisdom, right? And you're being grounded by this aspect deep in yourself that's like, let me be receptive to this. I'm trying to look at what my wisdom is right now. I've been accruing these ideas. I want to study and look at all of this before I take action. And you're really being guided by this idea of taking the reins of your kingdom.
Now, who doesn't want to hear this? What I most look forward to is taking the reins of my bank account when my kids graduate, but I'm definitely feeling buoyed that the cards suggest I'm emerging from a challenging period. Yet, the cards don't really suggest anything. I'm hearing what I want to hear, and there is enormous power in that.
So many people in my life go to regular counseling, and it does wonders for them. And I think tarot is the same way. It's an ongoing treatment plan for many people.
Sophie Nethercutt recently moved to Sitka. She fell into the study of the tarot by accident after being stranded in New Orleans. She has researched the tarot extensively in Brazil, South Africa, and Vietnam. She didn't study the cards, though. She studied the readers.
I think every single reader I talk to acknowledge that they are a caregiver in some sort of way. Some people, I remember this one reader I talked with a lot in Vietnam, described himself as a mental doctor.
My tarot reading was 15 minutes and used only three cards. Some last for over an hour, and clients ask pointed questions about important decisions in their lives.
I remember one reader in South Africa, and I'll remember this interview, I think, for the rest of my life. She said, look, I mean, people come to me, they ask, can I have a baby? Should I get this divorce? Will my mom, who's had cancer for 10 years, ever recover? I mean, people come with incredibly, incredibly personal and difficult and challenging questions. And for many of these people, this reader is the answer for them.
Nethercutt says tarot readers always work the same way, pointing toward possibilities, but not calling the shots, asking clients to look inward, helping them understand things they might already know.
If you ask, will my mom recover from cancer? A lot of people only want to hear one answer.
Back in the cafe in Sitka, Al Frichtig discloses what the skeptic in me has known all along. We all experience dark times. The benefit of tarot is as an exercise in positive thinking.
I think I continue studying tarot because it's kind of the university of yes.
Al Frichtig also believes it's important to act on the information you discover in a tarot reading, or the whole thing is reduced to a feel-good parlor trick. But it's one thing to hold up a mirror and another to act on what you see there.
It's a lot better than you're going to meet a tall, dark stranger.
I tend to think so.
I will give it a shot, though, since the answer is in the cards. For AK in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
Now it's time for 300 Villages. This week, we're heading to Metlakatla in southeast Alaska on Annette Island.
My name is Audrey Hudson. I am the mayor of Metlakatla Indian Community, located on Annette Island Reserve, Alaska. Our tribe is a sovereign tribe, and we've been here since about 1887. We were originally from Old Metlakatla in British Columbia, and so when we migrated over here, we became New Metlakatla, but we call ourselves Metlakatla. We're very deep with our culture, and the Tsimshian tribe here in Metlakatla is the only Tsimshian tribe in the United States. So we're very proud of our culture and we're very proud of our heritage. When I step outside here in Metlakatla, we have a lot of trees and
everything is green pretty much all year round. We have a lot of rain here. Our rain annually is well over 100 inches. We get more rain than snow, that's for sure. I think the hunting season is upon us now. Everybody's just getting the very last of their wood burnt in their smokehouses, and everybody's just about prepared for the winter with smoked salmon. And we're coming upon a winter now where I'm hoping that the gooey ducks will pass the grade, and sea cucumbers are definitely always high on the list, and we're hoping for a good diving season this year. Any member that resides on the island, and any member at all, can come home. And if you're a member of the tribe, you can enjoy the subsistence any time of the year. And it's something that we really encourage culturally. And it isn't really out in the world. And I've come to learn that culture is really very rare. And we're very fortunate to have what we have here in Metlakatla. It's very nice. I mean, you walk down the street and you wave at everybody that goes by, or you'd go for a drive through town and everybody waves at each other and everybody knows each other. And I found our community to be very unique like that. I love Metlakatla with all my heart.
Audrey Hudson is the mayor of Metlakatla. 300 Villages is AK's attempt to put every community in Alaska on the radio. If you want to hear your community featured, send an email to news@alaskapublic.org. Thanks for listening to AK this week. We had help from Robert Woolsey, Annie Feit, Ashley Schneider, and Dave Waldron. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Ann Hillman. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can also follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Ann Hillman and Ellen Lockyer in Anchorage, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Emily Kwonk in Sitka, and Lisa Fu in Juneau. APRN's Liz Ruskin reported from Anchorage. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. And I'm Lori Townsend. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by Nana Regional Corporation and Tech Alaska, celebrating 25 years of resource development and partnership at the Red Dog Mine. Salmon are all around us. They're in our rivers and our freezers. They fuel our economies and keep Alaskans connected to our traditions, our families, and our friends. The Salmon Project celebrates all the ways salmon are interwoven with our Alaskan lives. Learn more about the project and find out how you can be involved at salmonproject.org or find them on Facebook. Salmon, it runs deep in all Alaskans. This message sponsored by the Salmon Project.
Want to know more about how you and your family may get help buying health care coverage or avoid a tax penalty? Go to getcoveredak.org or call 211. This message sponsored by the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium, a nonprofit health organization.
APRN brings news about Alaska to public radio every weekday. APRN, we cover the stories that impact the lives of all Alaskans.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.